Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to System Mastery, the podcast where we are grudgingly reviewing the second half of Arya, Canticle of the Monomyth, the literary equivalent of that giant heap of Triceratops shit from Jurassic Park. I apologize for editorializing, but I think I speak for everyone here at System Mastery Studios when I say if I had two bullets and a gun, I'd sell those because I'm not a gun guy, but I'd throw this fucking book away. It's System Mastery. John, how you doing?
Hey, I'm great.
Yeah?
I'm so good.
Feeling good?
You're groovy. I've never been better.
You've got that fucking truth or dare look on you again.
There is a level of giddiness that happens when there is a tipping point for how awful something is.
Yeah, yeah.
And you referenced it. For those who do not listen to our Movie Mastery podcast, there is a point where we watched a horror movie called Truth or Dare.
And it's not the one you're thinking of.
No, it's a different one. A worse one, and I've seen both, and the other one is also very bad.
Yeah, it's not the one with the artificial CGI smiles you might remember from the commercials.
Instead,
but a stupider one.
It's worse, and so bad, and like, bad in a way that is hard to imagine someone arriving at, that it looped back around for me, and I was like, this movie's a 5 out of 5, no notes, it's the best thing I've ever seen, I've never been angrier in my life.
Yeah, yeah. You have a certain, like, kill trigger. You're kind of like Gandhi in the Civ games, where, where at a certain point, if you're disappointed
enough, I just
got
to stack overflow.
Yeah, you get stack overflow, and then you want to launch nukes at our review system and be like, this is the greatest game of all time.
Uh-huh. No, it is seriously, when we read the first half of this, I was probably the angriest I've been at a game we have reviewed in, I will say, years.
It's been a long, long time, yeah.
It has been a while since we have found a game that has made me, of all people, get that angry. And I was like, man, all right, well, at least, you know, the second half is mostly just world building, which is all this dude wants to do anyway. So at least
there's that.
He doesn't
want to build worlds. He wants to hold your hand and give you endless small suggestions of how you might enjoy doing that.
And that's the problem, is the beginning of this is you think, oh, this guy only cares about like the process of world building. Whereas you get to the second half and is like, oh no, he's also included the combat rules and the magic rules in here, which are most of this second half and almost entirely incomprehensible and terrible.
Yeah.
I was like, there is such a high bar for this second half to be worse, and it cleared it, and in so doing, I became so impressed with how bad this was that I was like, this is insane to me and is causing me to go insane.
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and say this in advance. I do not know what I'm going to do for bonus content this month or this episode. We'll do something. We always make bonus content. We show up with our bow up. Nuss. But I cannot, in good conscience or for the purposes of my own mental health, remember how to use the first half of this book. I can't. I will die.
I originally, before reading the second half, was like, oh, I'm going to take the character I did from the first time, and then I'm going to give him magic.
Yeah, give
because
him some
I thought
levels.
This would have a magic system.
It does not.
It has more of a magic suggestion.
Yeah, yeah. What it has is, I would say, 45 to 50 pages of different questions that it asks you about your magic system, each of which takes up the form of a 7-paragraph essay in which every third word is italicized because you're supposed to think it might be important later.
Let me tell you, I was going to save this until we got to the magic thing, but this is just a paragraph I had picked out because while I was going through, I realized something.
Yeah, the idea of doing this set of chapters that we just read in some semblance of order feels like it wouldn't really jibe with what the book was going for anyway. So
no.
Just go nuts.
All right. Here is one sentence from this book.
Yeah.
Esoteric preparation aspects include the respect of specific origin or reality-based correspondences and adherence to certain accepted laws of reality, the solidification of individual paradigms, or the need to shape affinities when directing omniscience at unresponsive targets. There is a full baker's dozen of capitalized and italicized words in that.
Yeah, and if you're like me or any other sensible thinking adult or even child, I assume, you made it about four words into that before your eyes glazed over and you started thinking about anything else.
Oh, yeah.
To it preserve is, your life.
And it's the kind of thing where it is constant, like, esoteric preparation aspects, correspondences, origins, individual paradigms, affinities. And you're like, these are all capitalized. You've got all of these terms. And I am used to games being like, hey, we've got a term salad here. And you're just going to have a bunch of capitalized words.
Yeah.
I get that.
Sure.
But usually when that happens, those words have rules assigned to them.
Yes.
And here they're just capitalized for no fucking reason because they don't mean anything.
I mean, at least in the magic section, there is a glossary that tells you what several of those words mean. Like,
it's just, what does it mean? Oh, it means you need to decide what your magic comes from.
Yeah.
Oh, what does it mean in game terms? Nothing. It has nothing to do with game terms.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, like, for example, you mentioned paradigm is one of the words in there. That's just a spell.
Yeah.
A paradigm is a spell.
The origin is just where magic comes from, and that includes gods or, like, passive wellsprings and shit like that.
Omniscience is just power that flows from something.
It's, I mean, omniscience is basically their word for mana.
Yeah, it's basically mana or the force or any other. It's where magic comes from.
Well, it's the magic you spend, because the origin is where it comes from.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's, like, omniscience orientation and omniscience, I forget the other word, but one of them is, like,
affinities.
Affinities, thank you. Like, one of them is the types of spells, so it'll be things like abjury and enchantment and so on. And then the other one is just, like, the type of things that exist in the world that you can potentially affect with this. So it'll be things like enchantment / reality, because your spells primarily affect things that are or are not real, versus enchantment / energy, which controls things like fire.
Yeah.
And so a paradigm is made up of a spell that uses each of those two things, because each of each of the omniscience sources, which are kind of like, are they coming from gods? Are they coming from the roiling sea of chaos and the spheres beyond? Are they coming from one glowing rock? Can provide various types of omniscience energy that you can harvest and store and create spells with. But lest you think I'm about to tell you how, I'm not. Because the book doesn't.
The book spends, for just the, like, magic section, just that's all it is, just magic, it is about 70 pages.
Yeah.
And of that, almost all of it is just saying to the myth guide, you should figure out how magic works.
Yes.
Because I haven't.
Yeah.
I did not figure that out. What I figured out is that magic could exist in all sorts of categories.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, pick one. And that's pretty much this entire second half of this book is just, oh, I didn't create anything. I'm going to give you the occasional suggestion, which at best, sometimes you will see a section where it goes, oh, here's things to keep in mind when you're making, like, a nation. Like,
yeah.
Oh, the theme for this, like, town or nation or city that you are setting this in, like, is it in a reconstruction period? Is it in a period of growth? Is it in a period of conquest?
Mm-hmm.
Is it in a period of defense? And you're like, okay, those are interesting things to keep in mind when you're thinking about a setting that you're going to play something in.
Sure.
But that is one page out of 120 where this motherfucker bloviates about just shit that doesn't matter or shit he has already said.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a big one. A lot of this book will be you kind of feel like you're hitting a lifeline or, I don't know, a life preserver, I guess, whenever you encounter a gray box when you're making your way through the book.
Because oh my goodness, a chart. Maybe that's rules.
Yes, charts look like they're going to be rules. And a lot of the time they are, although they don't really help. They don't contain any like numbers or anything. You know, all of this book is meant to regress back to a certain set of numbers to use those so-called trials that we mentioned in the previous episode. I shouldn't say previous episode. You guys are just going to have to bear with us and pretend we did not do an April Fool's joke. but so you know what I mean. I don't mean Tower 22, which I would kick a baby to death to review that again instead of this. It had to be a really evil baby. I'm not a monster.
Oh, yeah.
Just like an evil, like a straight up chaotic evil baby.
Oh, yeah. Just, you know, standard orc baby.
Yeah. But a lot of the time, they'll just contain nothing. Like my favorite one, which was the one for building your own species, mm-hmm. where they had like the IP, which was like the character creation points from the first chapter, cost associated with developing a new, or what your heritage factors are. And there are three options. There's the nation you grew up in, the heritage culture you grew up in, and the species you are.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll say things like, oh, you got a species-based heritage. You know, like, are you an elf or a dwarf or whatever? You have a heritage-based one, and oh, you're from a culture that's traveling or sessile or something like that. And are you from the nation of Amalanth or Imwendir or whatever? And then each one's got a point cost associated with it, and that's the entirety of the chart. And all the point costs are just the word special.
Yeah.
And when you look at, they all have an asterisk, and you look down below, it says, the myth guide will determine these values. And you're like, then what is this fucking chart doing here, you absolute 1994 grad student turd?
This is a game where I feel like the stuff that gets said in here, and it was really apparent to me in the conflict, the beginning of this, which starts with social conflict. But it's the kind of thing where you're like, oh, this in a mediocre game would say what you're doing in 20 pages in 2 pages.
Yeah.
And a good game would not say it at all.
Yes.
But it's all basically like, hey, do you remember the like social interaction charts from second ed D&D? What if I had that, but I explain what friendly means mm-hmm. for a page and a half?
Yes, everything's a little descriptor. So anytime you see a word, you think this guy might trust you to understand that a basic word like charitable or something is a word that you probably understand. But no, he's got 3 paragraphs on the subject. Even if he's already used charitable as one of the potential descriptors of any one of the many other numbers of things that he's gone over previously. So you'll be able to find definitions from words like beneficial twice in this book, maybe 3 times if they're interesting enough words.
Huh. The social, conflict in this gets split into 3 types. There is persuasion, coercion, and proposition.
Yeah, God, I'd forgotten all about that. There's those 3 identical charts.
And then after he introduces the concept of persuasion, coercion, and proposition, has, I shit you not, 7 pages in a row of those gray things that are normally like the side boxes. It's just that for full 7 pages. And all it is, oh, if you try and make this, then maybe someone gives you a benefit or maybe you have a penalty. But it just says that for like 150 different scenarios.
Yes, it's all things like, someone is trying to bribe you, but you are actually relatively comfortable in your current social status. This will provide a minor to moderate hindrance to the bribe attempt.
Oh, well, the persona is the target's inferior? There is a slight hindrance. And you're like, fuck, god
what
damn it.
What is a slight hindrance? Is that a +2 to the difficulty that you have to roll over or under or whatever? Because I forget how this all works. Don't worry about it. It's a slight hindrance.
Yeah, the fact that all of the things in here, instead of being, you know, +2, -2, all go to slight hindrance, slight benefit, benefit, hindrance, and so on. There is, in the first part of this book, just a chart that's like, oh, this is what hindrances and benefits are.
Yeah.
But you don't need that, because if you're just going to say, oh, slight hindrance always means -2, then just put minus two, so I don't need to go look at a chart to remember what the fuck this is.
I remember, oh, the salad days. I remember being mad at Cinnabar Second Edition, a game that I love now. My favorite game ever, as far as I'm aware.
As far as I know,
yeah.
Because this book has pushed everything else out of my head.
But we were mad at it way back when because it said if you cannot make a determination in an argument with one of your players, have them roll percentile dice, and then have them roll under the number they rolled on percentile dice on percentile dice.
Yeah.
And if they succeed, then they are correct, and the thing they are arguing for is accomplished. And at the time, I was like, why are you rolling four dice for what is mathematically a coin flip?
Uh-huh.
Why wouldn't you just flip a coin? And here we have an entire book where it says, well, the words significant improvement are equivalent to plus three, except they take up 14 more letters. So let's just use those instead every time for page after page after page for 400 pages.
Oh, God. And the results table is... There are all of the different types of results. There's, you know, mythic success on down to catastrophic failure. And for each type of interaction, the persuasion, coercion, proposition, it has to give you like three sentences of what it means if you get a mythic success. And all of it is just mythic success. The coercion is an incredible success. Oh, really? What's mythic success for a proposition? Proposition is an amazing success. Really? Because I thought it was a mythic success, you fuck! You stupid son of a bitch! I love this game! Kiss me!
I decided early on, when starting to read this set of chapters, that I was going to, if I could do nothing else, which turned out to be the case, I was going to understand the combat system.
Uh-huh.
Remember that? Remember when I was talking to you about that?
Hey, you... found a thing that I could not find, and God bless you, because I thought for the life of me that this motherfucker had forgot to put in a mechanic for how his game works.
It took me the entirety of you saying that to remember what you're talking about, because it's just another type of points. This book has no shortage of those, but it's something called option points.
Yes.
So option points sounds like it would probably be something that's related to like character creation or how to spend like an experience that you gain, which in this game is called like myth points, actually.
Yeah.
So you think option points sounds like it's something you would spend on options. It is instead the points you spend in combat to do actions.
Yeah. Now, when you get to the combat area and you're like, all right, I've been fucking just losing my mind at this game. What do you got? All right. Well, each move costs a number of option points. But of course, because it's this game, it doesn't just go, striking costs this, dodging costs that. Instead, it gives a, here are all of the moves. I will describe all of them. I will not give you the point cost yet.
No.
Because I will then later explain them again, and then I'll give you the point costs.
Yes. Yeah. And there's a whole thing in the options point. Well, I did figure out how to determine them. It's your characters. I forget which one of the 14 or 15 stats you have in this
game.
It's
your quickness plus two.
Yeah, quickness plus two is the number of option points you have. Quickness on average for a character is going to be five. So most characters are going to have seven of these option points. Now,
I mean, it's technically not your quickness plus two. I arrived at quickness plus two backwards because I could not find the one sentence where it tells you what option points are, and you would think the main mechanic of how your game works should probably have its own paragraph called option points.
Yes.
It does not.
Yeah.
Instead, I had to read the sample combat it has, go to the character, and be like, all right, this guy, it says he has seven option points, he has a five quickness, and this guy's got eight option points, and he has a six quickness. I'm assuming it's your quickness plus two.
Yeah.
And I was close. It's just you have a base of seven. And then if you have a four or five, it's seven. And then a six is eight and so on. So it is still plus two to whatever your quickness is.
Yeah.
It's just you get an extra point if you're at four rather than five because you get to keep your seven.
Yes. This game has the initiative system is you just compare numbers. But if you want, you can use the secondary initiative system, which is add a D10 to that and then just compare numbers.
Yeah.
To see who's going to go first. You get a set number of option points per initiative cycle, but you can spend option points that you don't have yet. You can borrow from the next initiative cycle.
Yeah.
Which ends up being a busted overpowered mechanic to do that because they get added to your initiative on the next roll. So if you say things like, oh, I'm going to just spend one of my option points on a total defense for this round. And then since I have seven of them, I will spend the remaining six on a action I'm making next round. So I have a plus six to initiative, so I am guaranteed to go first.
I mean, the thing is, saying you are going to do some sort of defense still is going to cost you at least two for a dodge, if you are allowed to dodge, because of course you can't dodge everything. You might have to evade.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Why are those two different things? I don't know. Fuck you.
Well, dodge, parry, evade, roll out of the way. Basically, any word you've ever heard from any combat system gets a mention in this combat system.
Yeah, because block and parry are two different things, which happens sometimes.
Block and parry are two different collections of things. There are six kinds of parries in this game.
Yeah.
You can parry to try and push back to kind of knock them off balance. You can parry to disarm. You can parry to shove them behind you. So, like, take their strength and kind of throw them behind you to the next rank of fighters. You can parry in a way that gets you inside the reach of their weapon. And then dodge has its own huge list of things you could potentially do. Every weapon in this game has between two and six attack modes because, you remember that fucking Daffy Duck Robin Hood speech? Remember that? Turn, haha, dodge, parry, thrust, strike. Well, that's because every weapon in this game can do all of those things. And each one of them has a different damage bonus and speed factor associated with that type of motion. Which get factored into your damage or your attack roll calculations.
Now, we did go past it. I did not mention where option points was buried.
Oh, please, go ahead. It's the first paragraph of the combat section.
It's the third, but yeah. There is a small one paragraph thing that is titled Action Movement.
Mm-hmm.
And it is just the persona's action movement rate is 7 yards per interval. And the base rate is modified by quickness. So when I got to that, was like, okay. And then it just said, refer to the accompanying table for movement. You'll decide, all right, yada, I get it. And I stopped before getting to the last sentence of the paragraph on how quick you can move, which says, you get a number of option points equal to your action movement rate. How do you bury the main way that a character does things in combat in the movement speed thing that is not even titled that? If you go to the index in the back, option point is not a thing.
It's not a thing.
You can look up. It's a main mechanic. It's one of three mechanics that exist in this fucking game.
Yeah, it's not a happy scene. I convinced myself that I was going to be able to memorize and describe how this shit works. And it is, I am at best okay at it because the combat mechanics, it's different for how to calculate your attack or your defense or your unarmed attack or defense roll pool. And then once you roll, it's comparative roll against the defense of the target you're swinging at, and you end up with a success range. So there's, minor through major successes and various types of failures and so on. There's also five kinds of wounds. Wounds will automatically inflict penalties, but they will start arriving at various points later on. Like, if you suffer a wound, you don't take your bleed penalties that round because bleeding takes a while to start. So you have to wait for the next round to start having your bleed penalties hit you because that's when your hands start getting slippery.
Yeah, but you do, based on the wound, get a penalty just baseline. It's just, this game is like, oh, you have a penalty. Okay, because you're injured. And then it's like, yeah, but you probably are bleeding and I'll probably just fuck you more for it. And you're like, well, if you want me to have more of a penalty, then just bake that into the wound. It's like, oh no, because, maybe you're foot got stabbed because, of course, this has a chart for random locations where you get hit. And then your hand grip wouldn't be bleeding, so I can't just say that you'll get an additional penalty to that.
Yeah.
I need a penalty to your movement or whatever.
Better stop you right there so you can insert another sentence about how this is brilliantly designed and specifically with flow and ease of use and quickness in mind, because that's how the book works.
Yes.
That consistently will stop every once in a while to be like, obviously we designed this with the utmost speed, accuracy, and intent of detail in mind.
The fact that the game even starts the combat section with, this is a game about, like, talking to people and not fighting, but here are some rules. It's very simple, and there are optional things, which means, generally speaking, the baseline combat, which is still figure out your four stats that you have to average to a one thing and then add together, and then you roll under after a difficulty, and then the other guy rolls his thing under his whatever after a difficulty, and you match your results on a chart for your, my result was this and your result was that, and then we match on there to see how wounded I am. That's the baseline without extra shit, because then this adds in the, like, hit locations, and maybe you slip on terrain, and maybe there's, you know, if you get a cut on your neck, well, now you've got a squirting bloody part to you, and your hand is slippery, and you're like, dude, fucking Christ, man.
Yeah.
For a game that's like, oh, we don't care about combat, here's a complicated combat system that doesn't work.
I really appreciate the fact that it put in that sample fight between, like, Tusharen, Rosary Paladin of the High Courts of Amalanth, versus Alan Thornus, the warhead clan host of the Skyclad Jayans or whatever, because it has a part where the obvious bad guy, because he's got like a holy paladin who he's mentioned previously and some guy.
Yeah.
When the bad guy takes a swing at her, he has a sentence where he's like, and obviously he is fucked up because she is unarmored of head and he has forgotten to declare a target. Therefore, he is only able to attack stupidly and does nothing. If he had remembered to declare a target, then he could have rolled 2d10 to compare against a secondary chart to see how close to her head he is allowed to strike in this action.
Oh, yeah. The
foolish mortal.
The weird thing is, he also is like, here's my paladin. She's in full plate, and this fucks your attempt to do anything if you hit any place where full plate is, which is anything but the head on her. And meanwhile, his guy is in leather and only on like his chest and arms, so when she stabs him in the leg, it's just like, oh, and he doesn't have any resistance, and he immediately takes a massive wound, and he fucking sucks.
Yeah, the fight takes like 13 pages to go over, but it's two swings.
Yeah, it is two actions.
He misses her twice, and both times she swings, she scores, puts a major bleed on his arm, and then hits him in the side of the neck, and he decides to surrender.
Yeah.
So it's not a very interesting fight. It does lead into the gear section, which I found to be... First of all, I thought that fight example was neat because it's another argument that this guy has never played a role-playing game in his goddamn life. If he's like, haha, this moron has forgotten to declare that he is breathing. And I'm like, oh, that's not a useful example to put in a book, because that's the kind of shit that players always do, and then DMs work with them because they're not assholes, they're friends.
Yeah.
But then we get into the gear section, and I got to tell you, for a game that says you can use it to play every single genre there's ever been, it's any genre where you know the difference between jazzeranting and bazainting is what it is.
Man, looking at it, and it's like, oh, what kind of armor we got here? Bazainted leather and jazzerate, huh? Great. Love that.
That's him looking up the old-timey words for shit that he definitely knew already. Because bazainted leather is studded leather. It's leather that has metal pieces sewn into it. Like, I know the common parlance that we get into nowadays that studded leather is not real. That it was something that was a mistake made in translation by, like, Gygax or whatever when they were designing D&D. And instead he meant bazainted leather.
Yeah.
Which has, like, discs sewn into it.
Yes.
But the common parlance by 1994 was leather armor or leather armor that has studs in it. You didn't need to do this. He's working backwards to come up with words like jazzerain. And you know how I know this for fucking sure? Because there's one section where he lists the different types of, like, chainmails that exist, and three of the entries are just the same piece of clothing in different languages. Chainskirt, Haubergeon, and Hauberk are all the same fucking thing. You can't fool me.
Oh, God bless. God absolutely bless this game. Bless its heart. Also,
if you're trying to tell me that you can have a sword or a Schwert, and I'm like, no, that's Schwert is just sword in German. And he's like, no, it's very different.
So this game also has reach and attack speed and defense speed. And of course, if you have a faster sword or a longer reached weapon, you have an advantage. Now, obviously, in your mind, you're thinking, oh, well, that's the trade-off. So, you know, if I've got a dagger, it doesn't have a lot of reach, but it's going to be very quick. If I have a great sword, it's going to have a long reach, but it's not very fast. You would be fucking wrong.
Dead wrong.
Instead, a great sword is 5 times as fast as a dagger, and also 5 times as reachful. So, fuck you, just use a great sword.
It also has every kind of possible attack you can do, where a dagger has 2 of the 6 possible.
Well, it can, I think, it can stab, slash, And then also it's minus one at diverting or blocking, so it's just bad at doing those.
Yes, where a greatsword can do stab, slash, and then the other three.
Chop, thrust, block, disarm.
Yeah, so a greatsword can do whatever. Reach weapons, to you have to make a special initiative attempt and something called an engage, which costs, I think, four of your option points. By the way, the option point thing is hilarious because a large part of the chapter, before it gets into explaining how many option points you'll actually have, is about how to split them.
Oh, yeah.
Well, level this stuff, like, where it's like,
if you want to do a dodge, then that'll cost points. But then if you do another one, it'll be an additional point into there. So,
you get surcharges.
Instead of costing two, the next one will now cost three, and so on. And you look at it, and you're like, oh, wait a minute. If I attack once, that's like six option points out of my seven. What do you mean the next one costs more?
Yeah.
The maximum anyone has is 12.
Yeah,
that's
if you have...
one guy can do two attacks if he splits it over to the next round.
And they specifically call out characters who make three. They're like, if you make three attacks, it'll cost you the following. And it's like, you won't. You can't. It's
no,
not,
no
it's
one
not,
will do
it's
this.
It's not a thing.
It's same thing with the dodge. They're like, ah, oh, this person will have to dodge three times. And I'm like, well, he doesn't.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Is this another example? We've talked about that kind of book in the past. Again, it's a Cinnabar thing of the don't look back style of not the Herald Star Never Far Behind, but rather the I already wrote that page. I will never go back to that page. That page is done.
Oh, it for me is fully a I never play tested this because I don't care about the game.
Yeah.
I only care about the idea of crafting worlds.
I mean, you want to hear an example of how much this guy cares about crafting worlds? I have a sentence I'd also like to read verbatim.
I would love for you to read a sentence to me.
I bet you already know what this one is because it's one of your favorites. Mythical beasts and legendary monsters. Look at you all excited.
You have no idea the air pump I just did when he started that.
Mythical beasts and legendary monsters form another common convention of the fantasy genre. Since Aria is designed primarily to be a game of social conflict and interaction, we have consciously omitted such creatures from this book. I like the idea that you can't do a social interaction if there's like a fucking unicorn around. You know,
yeah. This is a game about nations and the people within them. I couldn't possibly include a kobold. Are you kidding me?
It's got elves and dwarves. Let's not go crazy. Obviously, there's those. Each one of them needs eight pages to go over its ethical and ethnical histories. But believe me, they're not fantasy creatures.
If a manticore shows up, you've fucked up.
Yeah, and even if a manticore doesn't show up, but it's just like around, like if it's just somewhere in the hills, there's a wyvern. Well, now no one can have important tea at high court. They're all too distracted knowing that there's manticores about.
The game is even like, oh, you can maybe put like the rumor that maybe a mythical beast exists. Of course, when your players find them, maybe it's just a like injured lion. And you're like, dude, fuck you.
I mean,
I'm playing a role-playing game for an escape. I don't need to be like, ah, yes, here I am, a shit farmer. What's that? An interesting thing exists? I will go look into it. Oh, it isn't?
Mm-hmm.
Fabulous. What a grand time I'm having here playing Aria, Canticle of the Monomyth.
Yeah, I mean, I get where he's coming from. He's trying to describe what's called like the Beast of Gavaudan or whatever, where they're like, oh, back in medieval France, there was like a giant wolfy thing that was running around eating peasants, and everyone assumes it was just like a menagerie animal from a king's court that escaped and was just like...
Yeah, just some tiger got loose or some shit.
Exactly. So it could be like an absolutely disappointing situation where you're like, I've heard there's a legendary Esquilax in the hills, and you find it, it's just like a hungry coyote.
Yeah.
Yeah. So but that's not exciting.
No. God damn it. This book wants to suck the fun out of literally any possible thing you could do.
Yeah. There's a section towards the back of this set of chapters that we've read where I was briefly tricked into thinking that something interesting was going to happen because it seemed like some color had been added. Like he cared.
Uh-huh.
Like the author cared. It was the section on something he calls interactive histories.
Yeah. Which is... generally, the part where I'm like, oh, I did at least find one or two things in there where it was like, oh, think about the theme of your story, like I had mentioned before. Think about the setting, what you want to do. And the interactive histories portion basically boils down to have your players play as nations so that you can get the background history of where you are playing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little more interesting because at least it's a new style of playing a role-playing game not. I mean, I've seen them before. I've seen other games where you do play as nations instead of as people. Of Gods and Men, I think, had a whole section for that. So we've done other games that do that, and it's very Civ-y in terms of the way it goes down, where you're like, your stats are now things like your character, your religious fundamentals and your outlook and whether you're a preventionist society about stagnation and all these other things are like, you could easily see these as charts in a Civ game.
Yeah. I mean, it's very much not I have conquering at 4 and I'm going to go over to this nation and use my diplomacy of 7. You're like, no, dude, your whole deal is just you've got descriptive words.
Oh, it's supposed to be role played. And in fact, I have the other sentence I brought from home that I'd like to read.
Please share with the class.
Yeah, here we go. Players should attempt to place themselves in the position of the society they are controlling. Actions should not be declared as such simplicities as I change fundamentals. Rather, the controlling player might declare, at a special session of the Thalnrok, the ruling council debates the wisdom of imposing additional restrictions for the duration of the crisis. Most leading factions finally support the measure, although they make it clear that it is only a temporary solution to a much larger problem. However, it seems the logical short-term decision if a full-scale civil war is to be averted. There's nothing in there. There's no decision being made. The only thing you hear that's concrete is the concept of a civil war.
Yeah.
Everything else is just doublespeak.
Uh-huh. The whole thing in this feels like it. I mean, I don't want to say it's like AI, but it is very much like
avoiding.
As someone who has a degree in literature and has written many an essay on shit I didn't give a fuck about.
Sure.
But needed to fill 15 pages.
Yes.
That's what this feels like.
Yeah.
And I can't help but think every time I read this, it feels like you are just trying to fill page space.
Yeah.
And yet this is a 514 page book that didn't need to be that long. So you would think, obviously, this is a thing you're passionate about. And it seems like the thing you're passionate about is world building. But then you get to the world building section and you're like, no, it's just more bullshit nonsense.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a lit major. I took my share of college lit courses. But to me, this feels very much like the bad advice I would get about how to write essays in high school, which is if you can't think of anything to say, just do whatever you can to work the narrative into defining things. However you got to wrench that wheel to get to the point where you can.
If you can tell them what Webster's thinks.
Yeah. Then that's 30, 40 words you just wrote. No problem. And he didn't even have to think about it. Anytime you come up with a new concept, you stop and you define every word related to it.
Yeah. Nowadays, it's like, oh, I have heard that this story is about meh theme. And you're like, well, I'm going to go find the Wikipedia article on that theme and just explain what that is rather than explaining how it is that.
I think nowadays you just do the TV tropes thing and you say things like, this also did occur in the following 35 animes.
Yeah, no, you don't. Not if you're in school.
I think you do when you get a bad grade.
I think one kid does that.
I think someone got a bad grade for writing this. Because I have my own theory here now, where you're like, this guy took a lit class and decided, I wanted to learn how to write the perfect novel, and instead I'm just going to guide other people into how to write their role-playing games. And I'm like, no, this guy's a grad student who was trying to... This is a thesis. This is someone being like, I'm going to write my thesis from an interesting direction of attack on the Campbellian archetype of the monomyth.
Which I would believe more if any part of this outside of the intro of saying what the monomyth is was remotely related to
it. I think it just got the fuck away from him.
Because it is so infuriating to have a book be like, this is about the monomyth. This is about the hero's journey. Anyway, you're going to be nations, and you're probably going to need to worry about, you know, how your family is. You can spend XP in this game. Your myth points can be spent, of course, for your stats or your skills, but they can also affect your standing, because, of course, your heritage of I come from this place and I've got this family and whatnot.
Yeah.
Is very important.
Mm-hmm.
Your status is very important. And you can affect that, which means you can also affect your inheritance. And not just, I affect whether I'm the inheritor or not. Like, I made a character that was the third son, but now I'm going to spend points and they don't like that second son anymore, so now I'm in number two in line.
I'm sure you can still do that.
You can do that.
Yeah.
But in addition to that, you can spend to gain your inheritance, which means this is the first game I've seen where I can spend experience to kill my parents.
Yeah. Yep. But what I was going to say is, yeah, not only can you kill your parents, but I'm pretty sure you can also kill everyone in line to do the inheritance.
You can indeed spend XP to go, the firstborn son dies.
Yeah, my brother died of dropsy. Yeah.
Dropsy the clown came by and stabbed him.
Whoa. We consciously omitted Dropsy the clown. Otherwise, this game would not have good social interactions.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hold on. I guess it's Dropsy the court jester then.
It was Sir Dropsy, and Sir is spelled with an E instead of an I for old timiness.
For old timiness.
Uh-huh. I like that we do eventually get a repeat of that part that we were making fun of in the first episode of this, where he says you can use this to play any genre you want, whether that be dark fantasy, high fantasy, Renaissance fantasy, or even medieval fantasy.
Yeah.
Because in this set of chapters, he defines all four of those.
Oh, God. It's a fucking abomination, and I can't help but think that this is... It needs to be remembered. This needs to be studied by people.
But not me.
Definitely not me.
No, we don't review role-playing games. That it's impossible. It's impossible to review this without playing it. Everyone knows that. So it can't be us. But someone else needs to study this for posterity.
Yeah. God, I found a different review of this. And just having it say, did we really need 250 brain-numbing words distinguishing between fair and very fair complexion and pointing out that a given society curly and wavy hair is uncommon?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's what this book is.
Because that's in the three chapters at the very end of this, defining how to define your heritage, your
status, estate. And your vocational setting.
Yeah, because your status is your estate status. It's the status of your in your family and your inheritance and your legacy and all that shit.
Which, again, is all shit that was already gone over in the first half of this book when making a character. It's just now we need extra page space for it.
Yes, because we did all go over all that already and how much it costs to be like from a specific era of your family. Now it literally just repeats that shit. Just longer.
Yeah.
And I, for the life of me, can't figure out why. Because, again, this book is not little. It's enormous.
No, it's over 500 pages and continually is, I'm going to tell you about a thing. And here it is. And now here it is again, but longer now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you don't need to do that. You didn't even need to give me as much as you gave me the first time. The first time you told me about this, you had too many paragraphs. But at least it was like half a page, and now you're spending like a page and a half per thing. It's pointless.
Yeah, it's just too much detail. And even, you know, a lot of these are supposed to be like optional categories. Anytime you're like, oh, I'm going to design the omniscience of my world. So I'm going to define, in this game, it says you're defining the reality. Because once you define the reality of your world, then you can break it by adding magic to it. The things that run counter to the reality of the world are the things that are magic. But that does require you to define as a baseline what is normal. But when you see an example of the writer using everything, you end up with like, I'm looking at the reality creation example for one of the gods of one of the worlds that he's developed.
Oh my God. I was ranting about that literally last night where I was like, ah, good. All of the different origins and, aspects and everything boils down to here's a god of dreams. He is a god of dreams. His domain is dreams, and he is a god.
Yeah, yeah. So when you look, his name is...
And I am a clock.
Yeah. Time is important. Onkus, or Onqui, or whatever his name is. So you have to define, these are all the bolded sections. I'm not even going to read any of the content of these. The reality, concept, and nature. His name, Onqui, Lord of the Dreams. His nature, his form, his genesis, his connections, his orientation, his relations, his apotheosis status, his omniscience fundamentals, the conventions within that, the primary traits within those and their affinities, the provinces in which he is holds dominion, the archetypes over those provinces of which he holds dominion, the aspects of those archetypes from those Blah. The availability of various categories of omniscience, the manifestation and availability levels of those and their amounts, and the categories and amount levels of those amounts, the access to those categories, the categories to which he grants access in those categories, the restrictions applied to those aspects, the methods by which they are restricted, the ease of bypassing the restrictions to the methods of access, to the categories of access, to the amount of omniscience available from certain access categories. I am one third of the way there. And that is with skipping over all of the non-bolded text.
Yeah. I cannot stress enough how much this is just pointless wankery, because in any other game, you'd be like, oh, you should figure out where magic comes from. Yeah, probably.
Yeah, makes sense.
Oh, you know, is it gods or is it freeform or is there both? You know, do you have like, you know, clerics and wizards, are those separate things? Can you be inborn with it? Sure, fine. That took five sentences of me telling you, you should probably figure that out.
Yeah.
But instead, it's like, you should figure out the nature of it. You should figure out the form of it. And I'm like, no, I know. You told me. You should told me I should figure it out. You didn't give me any more tools to figure it out. You just told me 27 pieces that I should look at and also figure it out myself.
Did you also get confused when you're reading your way through the magic chapter about what an omni is? Because at the very beginning, he just keeps mentioning omnis and how omnis might be threats or they might be helps or how you might need to consult an omni for further information on this, and doesn't define them for a long, 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 long time.
Yeah.
And then when he finally does, an omni is basically just like a magic user club. It's just like a group of people who follow the same magic user traditions.
Yeah, and it has a sample of that for Anqui or whatever.
He's got one of his omnis listed. It's like
the Order of the Shimmering Ring.
Yeah, the Order of the Shimmering Ring, which is just like druids, basically.
And
dream druids.
It just, it's so weird, but all of it is so typical of the way that this happens, where, you know, an actual mechanic for this, like option points, gets just buried somewhere without any ability to draw attention to it. All of the magic section of this, instead of how do I use this, it's 100 pages of, whoa, you should figure out the way reality works. And you're like, okay, but how does the system work? And you're like, oh, I don't know. I put 4 pages in that's like, here's 5 charts. You figure it out. I'm not going to explain anything. I'm too busy explaining what a paradigm is.
Oh, yeah. I mean, paradigm is essentially just a spell, but this game doesn't want to include any of those because it wants you to design all of them, because actually designing spells would be game design.
Yeah.
And they will go to any length to avoid doing that.
I love that there is even a like sample effects area where it's like, ooh, here's a thing. Maybe you do an augury. And then it is just an example of what augury is.
Mm-hmm.
And that it is probably a divination with a manipulation will domination. And you're like, okay, but like, how much do I spend points on that? How do I get omniscient? Oh, fuck you. I don't give a shit about that. I've got paragraphs to write.
Yeah, it's mind bending. This is also a great section where you're going through these, like, you have to make these decision things where everything's italicized to indicate that it might be important later, but it is so hard to care.
Oh, yeah.
It's so hard. When you're reading something like, oh, customs, customs are the, you know, they're things that govern the actions, and they're like social mores or social rules. So you're like, oh, well, you should probably define the customs of your omni, which is your magic user club. Customs are divided along two lines. First, customs can be, and I'm going to use an accent to indicate that a word is italicized. Customs can be selective. The accent is someone who talks like that.
Yeah.
In that they only apply to certain members or hierarchy elements, or encompassing. They can also be non-binding, or philosophically binding, or influentially binding, or feature controls, or ceremonies, or rituals. And it's just all one paragraph. It's just like there's 500 things you're supposed to consider every time. And then it'll not italicize words where you're like, what the fuck is that? Pandect? What the fuck is a pandect?
One of the worst things in this is in true heartbreaker fashion where you're like, oh, there was something interesting in here and it's just buried under a pile of horseshit, is occasionally bits in this will be like, oh, that would be a really interesting idea for a role-playing game if that was what this was about.
Yeah,
had mechanics for it.
Every once in a while, I'd start getting an idea for a story while I was reading through like how to design shit, and I'd get mad at myself. I was like, don't you credit this bullshit for that. Because when he was talking about how you can draw power from the various omniscences.
That is exactly what I was going to mention.
He mentioned that there are like three or four ways to do it. Like they can be interested in what's going on. They can be entirely self-serving and not care. And you have to draw power from them by kind of getting under their notice. Or they can be like neutral about it. And for some reason, I started picturing a god that you can get power from, but only if you bully them hard enough. Like just a little worm god where you have to be like,
oh, so Pennywise?
Yeah. Give me some fucking power, you piece of shit. And they'd be like, oh, I don't, but I'm a god. Shut up or I'll kick your dick. You know, that kind of thing. I was just like, what if there was a little guy, just like some fucking little piece of shit that you have to bully to get your power from him?
But that was the thing, is when he was talking about like, oh, one of the aspects, you know, of the 20 different aspects you need to figure out is how do you get omniscience? Because omniscience is basically magic stuff that you turn into spells.
Yeah.
And when it was talking about like, oh, maybe you have to like, there's only one like spring in the world where you have to go and physically go there and like gather omniscience to yourself in order to then take it and cast spells. And I'm like, that would be the interesting kernel for a game.
Yeah.
If you took that one little thing out of these 500 pages and went, let's take that, blow that up, and give it mechanics and a game and an idea, that would be neat. But this game doesn't give a fuck about that.
Yeah, because imagine how cool that would actually be if you're like, oh, yeah, you can be a magic user in this world if you want, but to be one, you have to take a pilgrimage to this oasis in the middle of a fucking desert in the middle of nowhere, and I'm going to go ahead and tell you in advance that like 80% of the people who make their pilgrimage out there are killed by the other 80% because not everyone who goes out there gets anything.
And also, you have to imagine there's like, oh, there's definitely wizards who are like, I'm just going to stay here and then protect it from other wizards trying to get the omniscience from here.
Yes.
Because I'm the only one who should get it. So the whole idea of like, oh, you're going to have to not just go on a journey, a hero's journey, if you will, to get this, but then you will have to fight something there in order to accomplish your goal. And maybe it'll get hard and you'll deny the call. And maybe a goddess will give you some sort of a gift.
I always love how fucking sexist the basic ass monomyth is, where there's multiple parts where they mention women at all, but it's just like a goddess gives you an important gift. You receive a boon from the princess. And I'm like, what the fuck? How come these are the only gendered roles in this are like these random NPCs who give you a cool sword? Fuck you, whoever wrote this, Joyce or Campbell or whatever.
It just is so weird to me that the game would be like, I'm going to occasionally have an idea in these like walls of text.
Yeah.
But I cannot be arsed to go, oh, I should probably do something interesting instead of this.
Yeah. Instead, you do everything in your power to shut off any avenue towards interest. Mythical beasts? There aren't any. How to spend your myth points? Well, a myth guide may be especially permissive if you're playing in a heroic campaign, but if they're trying to play in a realistic campaign, your myth points may be spent for quite little, as how much personal growth can a regular person truly accomplish?
Fuck you, asshole. Mm-hmm. This is a game!
Yes, but is it a game of high fantasy or is it a game about mustard smuggling?
You know what? If it was a game about mustard smuggling and it had rules for how mustard smuggling worked and was focused on that, then it would be an interesting game.
That's
true. Instead, it is horseshit of the highest degree. It is a game that wants to go, hey man, have you ever thought about making a game? Do it yourself. I'm not gonna. Yeah. Fuck you.
It basically, I mean, yeah, if you were to encapsulate one thing from this, if you were to like omit the fact that it has a combat section and character creation, what it essentially is one guy saying things like, are you thinking about writing a role-playing game? Slow down there, bucko. There are 17,000 questions you'll need to answer first. And here's all of them. And all of them lead to more questions.
And
if you don't answer all of them, you're a shit role player and your actual players will hate you.
Oh, yeah. And it is. It's why I keep going, this guy took a writing workshop and then did this, because it is all just, you can't have a character make sense unless you know how that character grew up. And you may never say that, but you need to know that when you're writing them. And the same thing with actors studio things where they're like, when you are a character, even if they never mention your backstory, you need to know what your character's relationship to your mother is, because that will come through in your performance. And even though it's never stated, it will be part of it. And you're like, yeah, that's great, dude. But if I'm like Daniel Day-Lewis, then sure. But if I'm a motherfucker sitting at a table and just shooting the shit with my friends and I'm doing an impersonation of someone, I don't need to know all that because I'm having a good time with my friends.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he keeps going on and on about how knowing all this shit's going to make you the greatest role player in history. And, you know, I don't know for sure. I actually haven't met him. I just know people who have. But I think if you were to go to Brendan Ticketmaster or whatever that guy from Dimension 20's actual name is and be like, hey, man, how much do you know about your character's mom? How close to inheritance is your character? He'd be like, I don't fucking know. What the fuck kind of questions are those? If I'm on mic right now, I'll improv that shit out. But
exactly. It's the kind of thing where you're like, that doesn't matter to the character until someone needs it to matter to the character, and then I will make it up.
Yeah.
You know, if I have a character and I'm like, oh, this character has a whole thing about the relationship with their mom, and that's what this character is about, then of course I know that. But if my character is a funny little man who does a little dance, I don't fucking care.
Arr, that be handsome Pete. His mother disregarded him. And now he dances for nickels.
And it's especially infuriating when not only is it the, like, oh, here's the, you know, tale of the monomyth, and then this has nothing to do with that. But then, in addition, when he's like, and of course you're going to need to know all of this for your persona, because that's where good role-playing comes from. Anyway, I don't care about that. Here's nations, and you can do nation-building stuff. I'm like, okay, but I'm doing that in order to come up with what the backstory for this nation is by role-playing it. And yet, you don't want me to do that for my character that I play. Instead of playing the character and figuring out their backstory through roleplay like I would do in the nation building, instead I need to have all of that written down on a spreadsheet right now.
Yeah. There's a whole section here called interactive history. This was the part I mentioned earlier that almost tricked me into thinking that this was something the guy cared about, because all of a sudden it's a new idea. You're playing as the nations. Here's all these things you're going to need to know. But it gets boring very fast. The first couple paragraphs are like, hey, this is what you're going to be doing. And I'm like, oh, that's neat. And then 7 pages later or so, when he's finally getting down to telling you some of the mechanics or rules involved in this, he's already beaten all the interest out of you.
Oh, yeah.
And at that point, he's talking about how you've moved into Aria time, which is the kind of top level timescape that this game moves through. And then you get into what you can actually do. And it's just a list of internal and external action descriptions where you can do things like, oh, we will attempt to form an alliance, or we will taxation for this
I
round.
I will taxation.
Yeah, and then there's also another set.
But you can't say I will taxation. No. Instead, of course, you will say that the council has determined that in order to bring a better structures for the people of the town, we will need to increase the revenue that is taken from them in order to make sure that the...
And for that reason, we have decided to assess an additional levy of 3% upon each sheaf of wheat, which is delivered from the lands of Renyach.
Yeah, it's just... Dude, no one's ever going to do that. I don't know that this person has ever been at a role-playing table, because the assumptions of what role-playing is feels so wildly out of touch with what actually happens.
I'm still vaguely willing to believe that there are tables that are like this. You know, like, because I've encountered this trope before of, like, this very weird, very specific type of role-playing guy. Like, I would prefer not to think that you and I have invented a kind of guy to be mad at.
We didn't invent a kind of guy to be mad at. It's right here in this book.
We encountered them once, sure. But I don't think he's a unique type of guy. Because this isn't... Although I've very rarely encountered them either in person or in books. Like, this is the first book I've read that is this bad. Like, in this specific regard.
Yeah.
I've mentioned it in the first episode, but there is a character in the Neal Stephenson novel, Cryptonomicon.
Mm-hmm.
He's like the bad guy. You don't meet him until midway through the book, and Cryptonomicon has 7,000 characters, and 6,000 of them matter.
Yeah.
And so there's one who shows up towards the... I think he blows his own leg off with a landmine on accident. But his whole gimmick as a character is that he is this role player. That he is so obsessed with verisimilitude and correctly measuring that he spends all of his time, like, borrowing the computer at his college in the 80s to program it to run simulations on how much energy you'd get from either cooking or not cooking a muskrat. And, you know, just that kind of thing where it's just like an endless reexamination in a search of perfect simulated realism.
Uh-huh.
And that's, to me, you know, when I'm reading that book, when I was reading the Stevenson novel, I was like, fucking Stevenson, what the fuck, man? Have you never met a D&D player? That's not what they do. They say, I hit the dragon, and then they talk like Eric Cartman. They don't do this shit. No one does this shit. And then I encountered this. And I mean, I'm like, oh, the bridge is between those two is very real.
The thing is, I feel like there are people out there that are like, I want the verisimilitude, and I'm like, yeah, and they exist. And you don't see them at a table because they aren't at tables.
Yeah.
They're sitting at home doing, like, I need to create the right chart for how you hit a guy with a gun.
I mean, I feel this way, but to a far lesser extent, every time I do encounter, like, usually not in person, but, like, in forums, like, the real deep simulationist guys.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing wrong with it. It's a play style, especially it's a play style for, like, by yourself type play, where you're like, okay, I'm designing my entire new world, and so first thing I need is a big blank hex map, and I'm going to put what's in every single hex in the entire world, and the first rule of doing this kind of shit is no player input and no player allowances. So if they walk into that hex, and that hex is full of level 1,000 dragons, fuck them, I guess. They fucked up. I don't know why they wouldn't just notice that problem at the adjoining hex, be like, hey, don't go that way. There's dragons. Really, really powerful dragons. But simulationism, my dude. I'm used to people who are like, I draw pleasure in role-playing from extreme simulation of creating a world that runs whether or not the players are in it.
Yeah.
A well-oiled machine. And that is what this is, but taken to such a farcical extreme.
Oh, yeah. And it's just, I want to create an entire fantasy world. I want to create all the nations. I want to have all of the NPCs. I want to know everybody's relationship to everybody else. And then players will come in, and I guess they're allowed to play around in this world.
But they better know who their fucking mother is and whether they're fourth in line for the inheritance, because that means they're bound for the clergy.
And it also is just like, oh, and the reason that matters is because you don't matter. Your character doesn't matter. Your family might matter,
maybe,
but the book is so big on the individual cannot affect enough of a thing in their own lifetime for it to actually matter to my game. And I will again remind you that this is supposed to be a game about the hero's journey.
Yes.
And it just is infuriating.
All right, look, we could probably just keep being mad about this for another hour, like just reiterating the points, but I feel like if we reiterate too many points, we've fallen into this guy's dire trap, so it's probably best for us to get out while
that's
the getting's
fine.
Good.
That's good.
Why don't we say what our favorites and least favorites are, John? What's your favorite thing here?
Of course, my favorite thing is all of it. It's amazing,
it's
and
perfect.
I love it.
It's a perfect game. Buy a copy immediately.
Buy a copy if you can find it.
Better than Dragon Raid, raves John of System Mastery.
The most amazing thing I've ever read. You can't find a copy of it, so please buy mine for $400. My favorite thing in here is for sure the one little bit where it starts talking about theming out your setting and theming the place where they are.
Yeah.
And just knowing the overarching theme of it, because that at least is a good idea. Like having to know, like, what the tax rate is and how much influence a civil war might impart to the grain industry does not to a player.
Yeah.
But the, like, oh, when you're building a character, keep in mind that, like, they're rebuilding from a war.
Yeah.
And so they're not at war, but things are, you know, tough. So keep that in mind. You're like, oh, that's a cool thing to keep in the background of my head when I'm doing a thing.
Yeah.
And so that one little section, I was like, oh, look at you having an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Good for you. What is your favorite thing?
Idea for an oasis where the wizards all have to go to collect their spell energy. That was going to be my favorite even before you brought it up.
Yep.
That genuinely was the part where I was like, oh, hey, that's a good idea for a story. Because all of the offshoot things that would arrive from it, where you're like, yeah, eventually some wizard's going to get the idea that they can wall this shit off and make it into their own little magic empire.
Yep.
And start charging for access or whatever. And then what happens? Is someone else gonna like drill under it and be like, I drank your milkshake?
And it has a small section in there as well where it's like, oh, you should figure out how magic works. And then it was like, does it replenish naturally or is it a finite resource? And I was like, that's the most interesting idea you've said in like 70 pages. And you just gloss over it like, oh, here's one of the 50 million options. And I'm like, you have no idea what that would do to a setting, though, if you were like, magic exists, but it's a finite resource.
Yeah. And instead, he just says things like, even if it is a he actually has a sentence in there that's like, even if magic is a finite resource, it's impossible that your player will ever pull enough magic to affect the number.
A single player doesn't matter in my game.
Yeah. Which is funny, because if you're like, oh, magic's a finite resource in this world. Oh, you just said the most interesting thing ever, and you better fucking believe it matters if your player chooses to be a wizard. I mean, like, that's the preserver defiler thing from Dark Sun.
Yeah. It's just, God damn it. Every once in a while, he'll just offhand be like, and here's an insane thing you could do to a setting. Anyway, I don't care about that.
And you wouldn't even be able to do it because you're a pissant. You're like, oh, well, okay, well, thanks for giving me a neat idea that by your own admission immediately after stating it is 100% irrelevant.
Yeah. God damn it.
What's your least favorite thing?
Oh, goodness golly me.
Oh, just that it had to end.
That I can't just do this forever.
Yeah.
Every week needs to be Aria week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. For sure, the thing that got me the most is hiding option points in the movement speed thing and not having it be an indexed thing you could find, not having it have its own little paragraph, given that this motherfucker loves giving just paragraphs with titles to it to everything that exists in this except its main combat mechanic, which just gets thrown into, oh yeah, and your move speed is this, and here's how you calculate that. Also, it's how you do anything.
Uh-huh.
So that was infuriating because it is both the worst design decision and also counter to everything else that he has done. I'm like, you have a pattern of over-explaining things and giving everything its own thing, and you didn't do it here.
And otherwise surprisingly complex or comprehensive index.
Yeah, there's so much shit in there. And then it's just like, I don't give a fuck about this. This was definitely an afterthought I had.
Yeah.
So what is your least favorite thing?
It's got to be that one sentence that we both enjoyed so much about how he can't envision a world in which there's both interesting social interaction and some interesting magical animals running around. Those two things can't both happen.
Oh, Christ. The fact that he would be like, you can run any type of game as long as it's fantasy. And also as long as that fantasy doesn't include anything fantastical.
Yeah. And you know, I if you just didn't include a bestiary, which this book does not.
Obviously.
Because, you know, we're used to that in these games.
Because you're like, I've spent 500 pages and I don't give a shit about stats, so I'm not going to stat anything out.
But if you were just running out of space, I would understand. I would. But this book is 516 pages long or some crap, and it makes space in the back for huge amounts of character sheets and world design sheets, including several that one of which I'm showing to John right now, are just entire blank gray pages on which to include random notes.
Yep.
More than one of those. There's one for the setting notes on history, teachers, special equipment and privileges, and development notes, and another for the hierarchy of social estates, and both are just blank pages upon which you may write what you will. And I'm like, well, put a magical animal on those pages, you coward. Let's see whether or not I can roleplay if I know there's a Pegasus nearby.
Also, let's see if you understand how your own system works for creating a thing. Tell me what the quickness of a fucking, like, dragon is, my dude, and let me know if it matters.
In that section, after he says, like, we consciously omitted these, but you may not wish to, he makes a point to state that an ogre would probably have a strength of 19.
Yeah. Just offhanded.
Yeah, just a troll, I think, would have a strength of 19, which, like, you're like, what does that do? All the attributes in this game have caps.
Everything goes to 10. I don't know what happens past that, because you didn't give a fuck about anything that wasn't a human.
Yeah, so that's a weird choice. Just to be like, oh, he might have a strength of 19 or something, which does nothing. Oh. Well, whom I've seen naked.
Also, I need to say, not to continue to harp on this option point thing, but I also went to go look up the, like, sample character sheets.
Mm-hmm.
There is not even a place on the character sheet for option points.
No, I believe there's a whole page for combat mechanics instead. I think your character ends up being 6 or 7 photocopied pages.
Ugh.
Most of which is just blank space for notes.
My God.
All right, so would you play this game?
No. God, no. If someone...
Oh, I love your little hypotheticals.
...came up to me...
Okay, they always come up to you.
...and was like, I've got Aria, and I'm going to give you $500 to sit down and play this for a day.
Mm-hmm.
Like 7 hours. I would slap the money out of that person's hand.
And then get it and run away.
And I'd be like, ha, 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 you fool! Why would you hold it out to me?
You forgot I was a treasure goblin! You didn't boot me! No treasure for thee!
And then I would take my little sack and go into another dimension.
Uh-huh.
So what I'm going to do is take my sack and go to another dimension.
That's fair. That's the new take your ball and go home.
Uh-huh. What about you? Would you play this?
No, no. Just I just wouldn't. I made it a point yesterday to read and reread twice the combat section under the assumption that I would at least bring one area of expertise to this episode. And listeners, I don't remember any of it. I can't. It's just useless crap. It does not stick in your head.
No, it is. It's basically like if you're a person that the highest level of math you ever took was Algebra 1, and then someone put just like complex theoretical physics in front of you and were like, read this textbook. You'd go, none of this means anything to me.
Yeah.
These are all words that I know exist, but nothing has any substance. And you're like, yeah, that's what this is.
Yeah. So what would you play instead?
I would play, oh, I don't know, Balatro.
What's the opposite of this game?
What's the opposite of this? Definitely a micro game that only cares about punching. So
I feel like maybe Dread or Heartcrossed or Starcrossed, where you're just like, oh, there's a very rigid core mechanic. It is there's a tower there. You're playing Jenga.
I would
Jenga.
Play Muscle Marines.
Muscle Marines, where you do push-ups.
Yeah, I'll play fists.
Yeah. You just got to do push-ups, so you know exactly what you're doing. You're doing something.
Yeah. So. It's got one mechanic, and you do that mechanic.
Mm-hmm. So there you have it. Don't play this. Don't buy it. Avoid at all costs. This is not a place of honor.
Oh, Lord.
What was disgusting to us in 1994 is disgusting to us now. Can't recommend it.
Nope.
And otherwise, if you want to head over to our Patreon.
Please give us some amount of money for having done this.
Keep in mind that we have 0% chance that if you go to our Patreon this week, you're going to hear characters from this game.
I mean, you already have a character from this game from each of us. That exists. You've already got that. If you sign up, you get it from the last episode.
I genuinely don't know what you're going to get. It's going to be a surprise, but I hope you do it anyway, because we need you to. After something like this, we need your dollar.
I just need someone to believe in me, and... Won't you believe in Kamen Rider?
And no one ever comes up to John with $500 for him to smack it out of their hand and disappear into another dimension with his balls or whatever. So you know, we need that money. We need your help.
Need that money.
And we also need you to, this is the call to action section of the episode, rate and review both our podcast and our books wherever you purchase them. Because those book ratings go a long way. They really affect the algorithm even more than the podcast algorithm. And that helps us out tremendously. That's like our primary source of income these days. It's where all my college fund for Sage is coming from. So for the love of God, please, if you buy the books or not, just give them a nice review to help push those algorithm numbers for us. We appreciate it. And other than that, we're going to get out of here. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as we hated this book. And you have a good one.
Welcome to Character Creation Cast, a show where we create and discuss characters, the best part of role-playing games, with guests using their favorite systems. I'm one of your hosts, Ryan Bolter.
And I'm your other host, Amelia Antrim. Join us as we sit down with game designers, podcasters, and fans of games as we dive into learning about different RPGs through the lens of character creation. It's a combination of character building, player advice, game design insights, and even a little bit of fan fiction for a different game every month. We tackle a variety of new and old games, both well-known and indie-produced titles.
We learn how creating characters can tell us a lot about the games themselves. Check us out today anywhere you can get podcasts or on the OneShot Podcast Network at oneshotpodcast.com.